Good morning, and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship's virtual Sunday service. We are also affectionately known as WOOF. My name is Howard Baldwin. I use the pronouns he and him, and it is my privilege to serve as your lay leader this morning. Whoever and wherever you are at this moment, we want you to know that you are welcome here. Whatever your age or abilities, the color of your skin, or where you were born, whomever you love or how you identify your gender, if you do. Whatever your spiritual practices may be, or if you have none, and whether your heart is overflowing with gratitude and joy, or broken open with grief and pain, we are so grateful to be with you this morning, all of us local to this virtual community of conscience and compassion. I encourage you to check out the announcements in your order of service to see what else is happening this week, and especially to join us for our virtual coffee hour at 11:30, when we will check in with each other, share our joys and sorrows, and talk about today's service. If this is your first time with us and you don't have an order of service but would like to know more about who we are and how we stay connected during this time of social distancing, don't hesitate to get in touch with our congregational administrator through our website, whuuf.org. As I light this candle, the Unitarian Universalist symbol of our shared and scattered faith, let us speak together our opening affirmation. The words will be on the screen. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
Favorite thing about your mommy?
That she likes to tell bear stories and sing the Farmer Nay song.
I like her
because she makes things out of cardboard. That's my favorite thing. That's the thing I like most about Mommy.
All right.
She's kind, she's helpful, and she is useful.
Okay, what I really miss about my mom is that she's super smart, she's super kind, and that I just like her.
I like best in my mama when she's going in snow and skiing in snow.
The thing I like most about my mom is that we do fun things together.
Mommy loves to eat. Mommy loves my daddy. Her love Crash. Her name Hazel. Her driving the car.
What does Mommy do to help you?
She helps me make cardboard things.
Make magnet blocks.
And?
Make muffins. What does your mom do to help me? It's trick equals silence and math problems.
She helps me with my jacket so it doesn't blow it in the wind and not get dirty in the snow.
She makes special surprises.
Like what?
Like shoes or dolls for me.
I want in a TV. I want Albert Tom. What the dolls who show? I am a.
And my mom helps me with taking videos on the playground.
Anything else that doesn't have to do with the cardboard things? Does she do anything else to help you that doesn't relate to the cardboard things? We can come back to that one.
What's your favorite thing to do with money?
Okay, last question. What's your favorite thing to do with Mommy?
There are two favorite things.
Oh, yeah? What are those?
Make things on cardboard and watch shows.
I'm watching her heart.
Her heart? Watching her heart?
Yeah.
You love her heart the most?
Yeah.
Anything you want to say to your mommy? Like how much you love her?
A million.
That's
all.
That's all. Okay.
Hi. Happy Mother's Day.
Good morning, everyone. Today, we are celebrating Mother's Day. We're celebrating mothers and grandmothers and all those women that have had profound impact in our lives. I want to share with you this poem by Billy Collins, The Lanyard. The other day, I was ricocheting slowly off the blue walls of this room, moving as if underwater from typewriter to piano, from bookshelf to an envelope lying on the floor, when I found myself in the L section of the dictionary, where my eyes fell upon the word lanyard. No cookie nibbled by a French novelist could send one into the past more suddenly, a past where I sat on a workbench at a camp by a deep Adirondack lake, learning how to braid long, thin plastic strips into a lanyard, a gift for my mother. I had never seen anyone use a lanyard or wear one, if that's what you did with them, but that didn't keep me from crossing strand over strand again and again until I made a boxy red and white lanyard for my mother. She gave me life and milk from her breast, and I gave her a lanyard. She nursed me in many a sick room, lifted spoons of medicine to my lips, laid cold face cloths on my forehead, then led me out into the airy night and taught me to walk and swim, and I, in turn, presented her with a lanyard. Here are thousands of meals, she said. Here is clothing and a good education, and here is your lanyard, I replied, which I made with a little help from a counselor. Here is a breathing body and a beating heart, strong legs, bones, and teeth, and two clear eyes to read the world, she whispered. And here, I said, is the lanyard I made at camp. And here, I wish to say to her now, is a smaller gift, not the worn truth that you can never repay your mother, but the rueful admission that when she took the two-tone lanyard from my hand, I was as sure as a boy could be that this useless, worthless thing that I wove out of boredom could be enough to make us even. This poem sums up so much of my experience as a first-time mom during this pandemic year. We know that the COVID-19 pandemic has affected all of us in so many ways. We also know that women, and especially those who are mothering, have been hit especially hard. We want to celebrate you, and we know that our relationships with our mothers and mothers' relationships with their children is often a complicated one. So we know that this celebration, much like a lanyard, is not enough. We want you to know that we see you in your humanness, in your vulnerability, and in your power. We thank you for all that you do and all that you are. And if I had a lanyard to give you, I would give you that lanyard. I've been thinking recently about my relationship with my own mother and my grandmother, who I was fortunate enough to spend a significant amount of time with as a child. She died a few years ago, and one of my fondest memories of her will always be the time that we spent together in the kitchen. My own mother doesn't believe in dessert. When you would ask her what was for dessert, her refrain would often be, well, we have some fruit leather, or how about some carrot sticks? Now, friends, if you've ever had a fruit leather, you know that does not really count as dessert. So, in honor of my grandmother, who always was in the kitchen cooking up some delicious treat for her beloved family, I would like to share with you the book Thunder Cake by Patricia Polacco. On sultry summer days at my grandma's farm in Michigan, the air gets damp and heavy. Storm clouds drift low over the fields. Birds fly close to the ground. The clouds glow for an instant with a sharp, crackling light, and then a roaring, low, tumbling sound of thunder makes the windows shudder in their panes. The sound used to scare me when I was little. I loved to go to Grandma's house. Babushka, as I call my grandma, had come from Russia years before, but I feared Michigan's summer storms. I feared the sound of thunder more than anything. I always hid under the bed when the storm moved near the farmhouse. This is the story of how my grandma, my babushka, helped me overcome my fear of thunderstorms. Grandma looked out at the horizon, drew a deep breath, and said, "This is thundercake baking weather, all right. Looks like a storm's coming to me." "Child, you come out from under that bed. It's only thunder you're hearing," my grandma said. The air was hot, heavy, and damp. A loud clap of thunder shook the house, rattled the windows, and made me grab her close. "Steady, child," she cooed. "Unless you let go of me, we won't be able to make a thunder cake today." "A thunder cake?" I stammered as I hugged her even closer. "Don't pay attention to that old thunder, except to see how close the storm is getting. When you see the lightning, start counting real slow. When you hear the thunder, stop counting. That number is how many miles away the storm is. Understand?" she asked. "We need to know how far away the storm is so we have time to make the cake and get it into the oven before the storm comes, or it won't be a real thunder cake." Her eyes surveyed the black clouds a ways off in the distance. Then she strode into the kitchen. Her worn hands pulled a thick book from the shelf above the wood stove. "Let's find that recipe, child," she crowed as she lovingly fingered the grease-stained pages to a creased spot. "Here it is, thunder cake." She carefully penned the ingredients on a piece of notepaper. "Now let's go gather all the things we need," she exclaimed as she scurried towards the back door. We were by the barn door when a huge bolt of lightning flashed. I started counting like Grandma told me to. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Then the thunder roared. 10 miles. "It's 10 miles away," Grandma said as she looked at the sky. "About an hour away, I'd say. You'll have to hurry, child. Gather them eggs, careful-like," she said. "Eggs from mean old Nellie Peckhen." I was scared. I knew she would try to peck me. "I'm here. She won't hurt you. Just get them eggs," Grandma said softly. The lightning flashed again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I counted. 9 miles, Grandma reminded me. Milk was next. Milk came from old Kit Cow. As Grandma milked her, Kit Cow turned and looked mean right at me. I was scared. She looked so big. Zip went the lightning. I counted to 8. Broom went the thunder. 8 miles, child, Grandma croaked. Now we have to get chocolate and sugar and flour from the dry shed. I was scared as we walked down the path from the farmhouse towards Tangleweed Woods to the dry shed. Suddenly, the lightning split the sky. I counted to 7. Boom, ba-boom, crashed the thunder. It scared me a lot, but I kept walking with Grandma. Another jagged edge of lightning flashed as I crept into the dry shed. I counted to 6. Crackle, crackle, boom, kaboom, the thunder bellowed. It was dark, and I was scared. "I'm here, child," Grandma said softly from the doorway. "Hurry now, we haven't got much time. We've got everything but the secret ingredient." 3 overripe tomatoes and some strawberries," Grandma whispered as she squinted at the list. I climbed up high on the trellis. The ground looked a long way down. I was scared. "I'm here, child," she said. Her voice was steady and soft. "You won't fall." I reached 3 luscious tomatoes while she picked strawberries. Lightning again. I counted to 5. Kabang! Broom! The thunder growled. We hurried back to the house and the warm kitchen, and we measured the ingredients. I poured them into a mixing bowl while Grandma mixed. I churned butter for the frosting and melted chocolate. Finally, we poured the batter into the cake pans and put them into the oven together. Lightning lit the kitchen. I only counted to 3, and the thunder rumbled and crashed. 3 miles away, and the cake is in the oven. We've made it. We'll have a real thunder cake. As we waited for the cake, Grandma looked out the window for a long time. "Why, you aren't afraid of thunder. You're too brave," she said as she looked at me. "I'm not brave, Grandma," I said. "I was under the bed, remember? But you got out from under it, and you got eggs from mean old Nellie Peck Hen, and you got milk from old Kit Cow, and you went through Tangleweed Woods to the dry shed. You climbed the trellis in the barnyard. From where I sit, only a very brave person could have done all those things." I thought and thought as the storm rumbled closer. "She was right. I was brave. Brave people can't be afraid of a sound, child," she said as she spread out the tablecloth and set the table. When we were done, we hurried into the kitchen to take the cake out of the oven. After the cake had cooled, we frosted it. Just as the lightning flashed, and this time it lit the whole sky, even before the last flashes faded, the thunder rolled, boomed, crashed, and boomed just above us. The storm was here. Perfect, Grandma cooed. Just perfect. She beamed as she added the last strawberry to the glistening chocolate frosting on top of our thunder cake. As the rain poured down on the roof, Grandma cut a wedge for each of us. She poured us steaming cups of tea from the samovar. Then the thunder roared above us so loud it shook the windows and rattled the dishes in the cupboards. We just smiled and ate our thunder cake. And from that time on, I never feared the sound of thunder again. Friends, it has taken us all a lot of bravery to get through this year. On Mother's Day, I invite you to honor the people who have helped you get out from under the bed. What communities and people have held you as you needed to summon the bravery to get through the storm of this past year? Who is helping you continue on day after day? Who has helped you make your thunder cake? Happy Mother's Day to all those in our community who mother. I so look forward to celebrating with you in the future. Thank you.
On this Mother's Day, let us hold in our heart all those who love their mothers, who had blessed childhoods, and whose mothers loved them and supported them through adulthood, and celebrate today with joy. Let us also hold those who have been hurt by their mothers, don't like their mothers, or no longer speak to their mothers, and find today painful. Let us hold those whose mothers have died and today are filled with sadness or guilt or relief. Let us hold all who are mothers in our hearts, those who have found mothering fulfilling and a blessing, those who discovered much too late that they were not suited for the task, and those who just muddle along best they can, with good days and bad days. This Mother's Day, let's hold particularly all the mothers who have borne the brunt of this pandemic, schooling and caring for children while separated from communities, friends, and families, who have lost or quit their jobs, or do their paid work in between everything else, struggling with the impossibility of it all. Let us also remember all those for who this day is painful, those who wanted to be a mother but never could, or those who still try month after month without success. Those who have given children for adoption and wonder where and how they are. Those who are separated from their children or their mothers by distance or estrangement. Being a mother and being in relationship with a mother can bring out the best and the worst in us. Let us bless us all, wherever we are, whatever we need on this Mother's Day. Amen. Now let us take time for prayer, meditation, or reflection, as is your tradition.
Come, river is flowing, flowing and growing, the river is flowing.
Today is Mother's Day, so we asked some members and friends to spend some time honoring not just mothers, but women who provided strong influences and big impacts in their lives. Because sometimes it's not always mothers alone who do that. So thanks to Norma Heiser, Cleone Hawkinson, and Vince Winters for their thoughts. Also, we have a tribute from local artist and poet Sherry Levine, who's worked with WWF's Arts and Aesthetics team to create a virtual art show. The URL is in your order of service. I'm going to start by talking about my mother. I'm just going to come out and say it. Celebrating holidays can be problematic. This is especially true when you're trying to be inclusive. Do you celebrate Valentine's Day at the risk of offending or excluding someone who's single or divorced or widowed? Do you celebrate Mother's Day when your relationship with your mother is or was, well, strained? Sometimes parental relationships don't align with Hallmark cards. In fact, they frequently don't. I had that kind of relationship with my parents, so doing a Mother's Day tribute seemed silly. But people are complex, and parents are people. My mother was very successful. She worked beside my father when few other mothers worked. But one of the reasons she did this was to keep an eye on my father's drinking. She was what we call a para-alcoholic. She was more invested in that relationship than she was in her relationship with her children. That's the gist of it. But there were three times in my life, three crucial, important times, when she really, really helped me. The first instance came after I had gone to college in Southern California. I grew up in Northern California, in Palo Alto, and perhaps I shouldn't have been surprised, but I hated Southern California. Coming home meant going to Stanford. My parents were in real estate in Palo Alto, and strange as it may seem, it was not the magic money printing press then that it has been recently. My mother always used to say that recessions hit real estate first and it recovered last. I asked my mother if we could afford for me to go to Stanford, and she replied with the most supportive thing she ever said to me. If you find a way to get in, I'll find a way to pay for it. And she did. The second instance came when I was graduating. I wanted to be a writer. I actually wanted to be a screenwriter, which was an even more idiotic dream. And as it happened, I had fallen in love with a girl from Seattle, and my dream was to go there and write. I'd have to get a job, but something that would give me the flexibility to work on a screenplay. She would have rather I stayed closer to home, but she handed me the keys to her car and sent me north. The screenplay went nowhere, but I got a job at a magazine, and that was the beginning of 40 years in publishing. It was also the beginning of my love affair with the Pacific Northwest. Now, I know it sounds like these stories are more about money than love, and there's some truth to that. But the third instance really is about love. Sometimes, and I freely admit to this, boys rank beauty higher than brains. As I said, my mother was a very smart woman, and she probably could have been self-referential when she told me something I've never forgotten. She said, marry a smart woman, and she'll always be able to help you. I took that advice almost 30 years ago and have never regretted it. So while, like most of us, I have mixed feelings about my parents, I have to remember that my mother, when it really counted, said and did the right thing. Thank you.
Good Mother's Day morning to all of us who are and aren't. I'm delighted to tell you something about Agnes Grace Peters Heiser, my mama, who was born May 5th, 1901. She always said, the year after the year. I didn't think about that much until now, and it impresses me. The year after the year. Yes. This Mother's Day, 2021, Mama is 120. Mama was funny. She could laugh at herself and her predicaments. She had lots of predicaments. When she wasn't nervous or sad. Nobody said the word depression when I was growing up. Most of all, I know Mama liked me. I heard her say once to someone, I hope she will always be this way. Wish I had asked her what way it was. And now is a picture. Okay. Here is a picture of Mama and an all-girl orchestra. The Rosarian girls in some of the 19-teens. Mama is the one above the banjo. They traveled on the red electric train boarding Union Station in Portland, gigging in little towns like Carlton, Sherwood, Newburgh, Silverton, and probably Salem, Eugene, and Corvallis. I don't know for sure because I can't find the Rosarian girls on the web yet. Here is another picture of Mama and her viola. I knew her as a violinist, but Jim Johnson said, I need to say this is a viola, and I do. So anyway, this is about 1918. She and Daddy married in 1923. I was told he played the banjo too, but I didn't see or hear him. He was making a business when I knew him. In the 30s, they had two bratty girls, my sister and me. We teased Mama about her violin, made fun of her, and hurt her. I would have spanked us. But she put the violin away. Oh, Mama, how can I tell you it is me I hurt?
You could have played and loved your violin into your life after Daddy's death, rather than depressing a life for which you were not prepared. You were my model, but I didn't see you that way then. You are now becoming more and more alive and beautiful as I grow older and older. If the universe will help, I'll spend more time with you, recalling, remembering, appreciating, and loving you with my grown-up heart. Happy Mother's Day, 2021, and happy birthday, 1901. I love you, Mama. Thank you. This was such a pleasure.
Friendship with Eloise Binns. I met Eloise a dozen years ago at WOOF. She introduced herself as Eloise from the Plaza. I laughed, familiar with the Eloise books, and I knew we'd be friends. Listening to her banter with Joan Bailey in the sanctuary is a perfect expression of her friendships in action. Eloise from the Plaza, she is. She is observant, open, adventuresome, and easily talks with those nearby. Whether quizzing the server in a Thai restaurant or talking with friends at the Southside Cafe, she is real, always. She knows her way around life. She loves and shares books, music, and movies, but especially music, from classical to live jazz in her woods. She invites me to chamber music concerts, her seats close to the stage. She sighs, eyes closed, listening. Her live Jazz in the Woods events bring family, friends, and neighbors together, easily enjoying her hospitality. We have adventures. Before the days of GPS, we got lost on our way to a Van Gogh painting class. Wearing her beret and artist smock, she asked directions. A young fellow led us in his tow truck through the maze of streets. With a wave and a beep, our tow truck angel was off. We paint in her woods, sitting on the stumps around the fire pit. On a trip to Philadelphia for her Temple University music reunion, we shared a room with her lifelong friend Ruthie, a 4'10" red-haired firecracker from Long Island. We ate Philly cheesesteaks for a first for me. Philadelphia became a real place, not something far away and long ago. I located my grandmother's address smack dab in the middle of the Temple campus. Grandma, young in Philadelphia, came alive. We walked the paths of the Morris Arboretum, where Eloise was an intern. We had lunch in a favorite pub in Chestnut Hill and ate a schmitter, a burger layered with many things I'd never eat together, including salami. We pick her golden raspberries and feast on wild blackberries in her woods. Her apple trees are abundant with varieties perfect for applesauce and pie. We walk her woods, her creation of acres of native trees now fully mature, a natural woods, not a park. Everything about Eloise leads to real with a capital R. She lives her sadness privately, but enthusiastically shares life's gorgeous, precious moments. Her surprise, seeing a deer so close to her sunroom window, munching young leaves on her rose trellis, when suddenly the deer turns, then glides up and over the fence. She finds pure joy in that graceful moment. I treasure our friendship.
Hi. My name is Vince Winters. I've been attending WOOF for 2.5 years, and I've been a member for 1.5 years. The call for a Mother's Day presentation requested a tribute to your mother or a significant female presence in your life. This talk is not going to be about my mother. My mother was a good woman, now passed away, and we had a good relationship. But her life and our relationship was constrained, as in Straitjacket, by someone whose fears gave them the need to tightly control everything and everyone in their surroundings. The person who I am going to talk about is a woman who had the most significant influence in my post-childhood life. This is true despite the fact that I never met her in person. I know her through her writings, recordings of her retreats, and discussions with many people who knew her and some worked for her. Her name is Pema Chodron. She's a Buddhist nun, and she founded and is a director of Gampo Abbey, which is a Buddhist monastery on Cabot Island in Nova Scotia, Canada. I'm going to discuss only one of the many important things I learned through her. It caused a shift in my perspective that helped me refashion my life and changed me from a very unhappy, unpleasant person into a happy, unpleasant person. There are limits to how much you can change, after all. Pema gave me the understanding that much of my unhappiness was the result of a deep-seated illusion. The illusion was that I had a birthright to a world in which things were permanent and secure, a world in which I would be treated with perfect justice, a world where following the rules, quote-unquote, would inevitably lead to secure and permanent happiness. When it dawned on me that this belief was, in fact, a fantasy, I was able to accept that change is a permanent thing. With this acceptance, I learned to be comfortable with the fact that my life would periodically be turned upside down and I would need to restart it over again. I learned to push through such situations with a certain amount of equanimity, and I learned that I did possess the resilience to deal with really painful things and come through okay. Painful things that would previously have devastated me for a long time. So I am very grateful to Pema for her teachings and for sharing them with the world. And I'm pretty sure that there's thousands of other people who feel similar gratitude because she had a wide audience. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sherry Levine, and today I'm here to celebrate my mother's life. My mother's name was Kay Levine. She was an exceptional painter, teacher, mother, and grandmother. I wrote two poems to share with you on this day. The first one is called What I Didn't Know. I didn't know I would be without a mother, lose another kind of love. I didn't know letting go was just an option or opinion. How time marches like warrior ants who amble across the sand. My mother passed away last year, and I spent a lot of time cleaning out her home. And I was always finding things, and I still think I'm finding things. This is called darning. Cleaning out my mother's dresser, I find a pair of brown wool socks. She had stitched the toes, zigzag, loops protruding, threads sticking out, like the little hairs that wouldn't fit into the ponytail my mother tried to tie. I picture her rummaging through her sewing kit, searching for a brown spool. Spinning on the kitchen stool, I watch her stiffen the limp thread with spit, pinch it with nimble fingers, squinting as if she were painting a wheat field or a placid lake. She holds the brush steady, level to a horizon of trees. The red socks they give my mother in the hospital are dotted with little white hearts and paw prints. We shuffle past the nursing station. The IV pole drags behind us. Gripping my arm, she waves at the nurse she just yelled at in the bathroom. She brushes silver hair away from her tired face and squeezes my hand. We move from room to room as if we are floating down the hall, past the nursing station, lunch carts, past the beeping noises of codes. A sudden breeze lifts her blue gown, and we float higher and higher, much further than the moon. Thank you so much.
Everything I ever learned that gets me through the worst, I learned at my mama's knee.
As we extinguish the chalice, marking the end of our time together today, let us resolve to carry within us the warm glow of its flame and all that it stands for as we make our way through the coming week and all that it brings. And may we meet again in a spirit of peace, love, compassion, and health.